low of 4 below. Sunny tomorrow, a high of 15. Then 4 tomorrow night. Increasing clouds, not as cold, a low of 8 above. For Saturday, a slight chance of snow in the afternoon, warmer, a high of 32. For Sunday, partly sunny, warmer still, a high around 34. Right now, with some light snow, a temperature reading of 14. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is coming up. Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, featuring unique shopping and the historic Jack's Cafe featuring an eclectic menu. A Kenosha tradition since 1911, modernized for a new age. Visit jackandrea.com for more information. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's Morning Show. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm very happy to welcome into the studios today Nan Calvert, who has braved the elements, no small matter, with the weather out there today. And she has come through the snowflakes along with another special guest who joins us today to be part of the morning show, Eshedden Farley, director of the Farley Center in Verona, Wisconsin. And we are going to be exploring, in particular, a very, very intriguing topic. First of all, welcome to both of you. Glad you are here one way or another.
Yes, thank you. Really glad to be here.
Yeah, all right. Not an easy trip. And no. So everybody who is out on the road this morning, take it easy. Yes. It is extremely slippery here in southeastern Wisconsin. So, Nan, tell us, first of all, how you came to know something about the Farley Center for Peace, Justice, and Sustainability, and what prompted you to want to bring them on to the program?
Well, I am very lucky to have a friend and colleague named Eric Carlberg. And a couple of months ago, I got an email from Eric, and he said, "Say, I think you should have Shed Farley on your show." Not my show, but your show. And I said, "Oh, okay, let me check it out." And I thought, yep, as usual, Eric was right. And so here he is. As we sort of launch into our topic, some people might think it's a bit of a departure from what we usually talk about, but actually it isn't. So what we're going to talk about is what happens to us at the end. So those of us who have lived a good, strong environmental ethic for most of our adult lives, who've perhaps even worked in the environmental field doing all kinds of things, we don't want at the end of our lives to have that thrown away. Hmm. We want to continue that. We want to continue our values. And so one of the ways to do that is something called green burial. And that's what Shed is here to talk about. He's going to talk about the natural path sanctuary and what is green burial and what his center has to offer.
Very good. And we're really intrigued to find out more about that. So, Shed Farley, we welcome you to the morning show, and thank you for making the trip over from Verona.
Thank you for inviting me, and I'm glad I made it. Glad I found it.
We're glad you did, too. And before we launch into this real specific topic that's going to be our primary focus for the hour, we need to learn a little bit about you, and we need to learn a little bit more about the Linda and Jean Farley Center for Peace, Justice, and Sustainability. So first of all, tell us something about Linda and Jean Farley. I think you're pretty well acquainted with them.
Pretty well acquainted with them. So Linda and Gene Farley were my parents. They were both physicians. My father was chairman of the Department of Family Medicine at the University of Wisconsin. My mother was an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin, but less administrative, more patient-oriented.
Wow. So just to interrupt for a second, so my sister, who is a doctor, who studied at the medical school at the University of Madison, would have probably known one or both of your parents then.
So anybody in the family medicine circle would know of my parents.
Wow.
Mostly my father. So my
small
father
world.
kind of pioneered the whole program, medical school program of family medicine back at the University of Rochester.
Wow.
So he was one of the pioneers of family medicine in this country.
Very good.
And yeah.
So tell us more about the values that your parents espoused and which prompted them to live the lives that they did and have this center as, in a sense, their namesake and legacy.
Yep. So I'll kind of add a couple things. So there are four brothers, four sons of my parents, a fifth son who was added later. Long story we probably won't discuss today, but anyway, so we all grew up in this house that was, or other houses, whatever house we were in, that was always the center. My parents always had people over. They were active in just virtually every issue that was important throughout their lives. it didn't stop. They went from Rochester doing that to the University of Colorado, same position, and then to the University of Wisconsin. Kept dropping kids off along the way of their moves, so I stayed in Colorado. But anyway, in 2009, I should backtrack a little. So they purchased in 1983 a piece of land. Bought it from a farmer who was about to undergo bankruptcy. And he was desperate to sell the piece of property to get him out of that trouble. So he picked his worst farming land, and which was all woods and stuff. And
gorgeous, I'm sure.
And gorgeous. And my parents happily bought it because for them that was the best piece of land. It still had some tillable acres, so even while they were both living there, they were not farmers, they were doctors, but they had land. There's lots of communities and individuals in Wisconsin, but certainly everywhere else too. In Wisconsin, we have a large Hmong population. They immigrate here often with farming skills and know where to do it. So they opened up their land for several Hmong families.
Huh.
Just to use, and my dad had some equipment, rototillers and stuff. So that happened long ago. And they always had the house in Verona as a center. People met at it. It's a beautiful house. It's the land is beautiful, and it was just a place that people gathered. So in 2009, my mom died. And she had wanted to donate her body to science, and science did not want her body. It's not uncommon. You'd think if you have two parents who are doctors, they might know that's a possibility. Never thought of it. So we ended up with no plan B. So we sat down with Dad, and we, meaning my brothers and I, said, okay, what do we do? And he says, well, she loves this place. We have 43 acres. Maybe we can get permission to bury her on site, which we did. And that was a very simple thing to do, rural area. And we just called our township, town of Springdale, and took maybe an hour. And they gave us permission. The catch was none of their kids have ever lived in Wisconsin. So the catch was that And we sat down with Dad and talked about this again. When Dad died, we'd here's the first catch is the rules for a rural burial on your property. One person is fine. Two people, you have to certify and license it as a cemetery.
Wow.
So we sat down with Dad. You know, Dad, what's going to happen when you die? We're going to have to bury you somewhere else and sell the place. Mom will go with it. Or if you get the licensing, we'll have to bury you. We can bury you here. We'll still have to sell the place because none of us could afford to hold on to it. So Dad was never a small thinker, and he immediately started thinking about certifying not just for a cemetery for two people, but to take all those wooded acres in the meadow acres that we have and turn it into the cemetery. So 2.5 years later, the cemetery came into being, like in 2011. 25 total acres right now. We're in phase one, and which is 12 acres. He also at the same time said to himself and to us and to everybody who would listen that wasn't enough. So at the same time, he started the Linda and Gene Farley Center for Peace, Justice, and Sustainability, which is a 501c3 nonprofit charitable organization. The cemetery, by the way, is a 501c13 nonprofit cemetery. So the 13 is a specific to cemetery designation.
Wow, that's quite a story. So before we get into this fascinating matter of natural burial, tell us a little more about what the center offers, the Center for Peace, Justice, and Sustainability. There's a lot packed up in that title.
There is a lot, which means that we have to contain ourselves, so which we don't do very well because we do a lot. So one of the first things we decided to do when it became a nonprofit organization, the 501c3, is to build on the things that my parents had done all their lives. At this time, my dad was still alive. And so one of the first things we did, because we already had Hmong farmers there and because we were donated an additional 25 acres of land, some of it tillable, a lot of it tillable, we started what we called at the time farm incubator, the concept of which we'd supply the land, we'd supply the equipment, the infrastructure, bring in underserved populations who might want to farm but had no resources to do so. And the concept of the incubator is you'd bring them in, you'd train them in organic farming because that's all we did, that's all we allowed. And all specialty crops, so vegetables, no corn, alfalfa, or hay, or soybeans. And we focused on those people who otherwise would not be able to do it at all. So over time, and it wasn't much time, we have now farmers from around the world, Colombia, Mexico, the United States, Canada, Russia, Tibet, India, Thailand, China. I may be missing one.
Wow.
And so this is small-scale farming, which organic farming mostly is. And the incubator concept was to bring them in, train them how to do that, train them the business practices, taxes, all kinds of things, and we had a large grant to do this. But the concept was you train them in all this and then cycle them out and bring in a new group of farmers. We did that for the term of the grant, the USDA grant we got, although there was no set time frame for that cycle. And realized quickly that was not a very doable business plan because these farmers would go out and would still not have the resources necessary to buy the land, put in infrastructure, buy equipment. It's tremendously capital intensive to start a farm. So we dropped the incubator designation, and now we are a collaborative farm.
Ah,
That's what we call it. Couldn't use cooperative because that's a legal term which we don't meet that standard.
Right. So this farmland that was, in a sense, cast off by this farmer kind of in desperate straits as the least valuable of the land that he had has become actually tremendously valuable with this sort of new lease on life, in a sense.
It's been tremendous for us. It's been tremendous for our farmers. Our farmers are all independently owned. So of all those countries, there's I didn't mention as many countries as I did farmers. But they all get apportioned a piece of land of the size that they are capable of handling. So we have some very small ones with one or two people working it, up to pretty large ones. And then one of our farmers, our longest term farmer actually, is also has expanded his farm out to another piece of property, not on our place.
So. Sounds like a beautiful place in so many ways and a place very much worth visiting, that's for sure. For those of you just joining us, we have with us in the studio Nan Calvert, who has brought with her Shed Farley, who is director of the Linda and Jean Farley Center for Peace, Justice, and Sustainability in rural Verona, Wisconsin. So not too far from Madison.
No.
And we want to turn our attention now to one facet of the Farley Center, and this is at the Natural Path Sanctuary, and this is where a portion of the land has been set aside as something of a cemetery, of burial grounds, but burial grounds very different from the standard cemetery. And we've heard a little bit already about the death and then the burial of your mother on the grounds of this beautiful property as kind of the start of this this new venture. So when it came time to bury your father, you needed to find the designation for to become a cemetery, and that's what you are. So now, in a sense, what do you offer to the public, to somebody who is interested in this?
So I have to expand a little bit on that. So part of the reason we did this is because after we decided to bury Mom on site, we knew it was going to be a natural burial. And natural burial consists of a burial with no embalming, no chemicals allowed. Anything that goes into the ground has to be biodegradable. And the word decomposition is used often. We say recomposition. The grounds that we're burying them in are natural woods. My dad, while he and Mom were still alive, had these 25 acres of woods and mowed paths through them all just so he and my mom could enjoy a walk in the woods. They invited friends. They invited neighbors. It was used by a lot of people even way back then. And so it was the obvious place to put it. The paths are already involved. And the concept that my dad had was that he never wanted that original recreational use of bird watching, cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, hiking, picnicking. He never wanted to lose that part of that piece of land. So the decision was made, our green burial, our natural cemetery, we don't mow it, we let it grow as it is. With a few exceptions, we do battle invasive species all the time. And you can walk through our cemetery and not even recognize it as a cemetery. That's happened many times. People have come up to me, said, "Hey, I heard about your cemetery. I'm real interested in it, and I can't find it." And they're standing right in the middle.
And it sounds like what you were just saying is that this plot of land, it's not set aside behind a fence in kind of a holy sort of way. You tread lightly on these sacred grounds. I mean, people are running through it and playing on it and so on. I mean, as per your father's wishes.
As per my father's wishes. And that is absolutely true. We have no gates. We have no fences. And the place is open for anybody, regardless of whether they're involved in anything the Farley Center does or anything the cemetery does. It's just a place for anybody who wants to come out and enjoy. And that happens frequently every day.
Right.
Winter time, we have cross-country skiers and snowshoers and people just even trudging through the snow and come out. And it's just always open. No one lives there. But even so, people are welcome to come and go as they want. I'm missing a point, but maybe we go forward and it'll come back.
So, at the current moment, how many people, at least approximately, are buried there?
So we've been in since 2011. So we're in our ninth year, I believe. And we have sold somewhere around 500 burial sites. We have buried about 190.
Wow.
So
are these graves in any way marked?
So there's a good question. I talked about leaving it to look as natural as possible. It was my dad's wish right from the start not to have a marker. His grave doesn't have a marker. My mom's grave doesn't have a marker. But quickly, we realized that people do want markers. So our marker policy is we do not want it to look like a cemetery, so we don't allow the cut, squared, polished granite markers that are so common. We say the stone itself has to be shaped by nature. We install it so only the engraved surface is exposed, so flush with the surface of the ground. So looking around, you can't, they're just not vertical. And it blends in, and it's very, people really like that.
Yeah.
So that's one of the ways we can mark sites. But even though some of the sites are marked, not all of them, it's very difficult to find them when everything has grown up around it, which it does, because this is Wisconsin. Anything
right.
will grow.
Right.
So people ask me, what if we want to come visit and we can't find the exact site? GPS doesn't work. It's nowhere near accurate enough. So all they have to do is give me a day's notice and call me, and I'll go make sure I know exactly where the site is, and I'll take them to it.
So you have kind of a graph or chart that's fairly detailed.
Just like every cemetery in Wisconsin, and I was going to say in the United States, there might be some illegal ones somewhere.
Well, and I'm curious. I mean, I wanted to ask you, although I don't think we need to talk about it too long, but the process of becoming designated or certified as a cemetery, what is involved in that process? Is it a long, laborious process? And I'm especially interested in what you have to do in order to secure and maintain that designation.
Okay, so it was not an easy process. So we had to apply. We had to make sure Dane County was going to zone it properly for us, and we had to make sure the town of Springdale would actually allow it. It was a 2.5-year process.
Wow.
So, and as an aside, I'm constantly getting calls from other people in other parts of Wisconsin who want to start their own green cemetery. None of them have happened yet. It takes it takes a long time of a determined effort to happen. So aside from that, after the 2.5-year process, I've kind of lost track this early in the morning of where I was.
So we were talking about just how laborious a process it is.
It was quite a laborious process. We had to talk with neighbors. We had to go to town council meetings, and frequently, we had our direct adjacent neighbors were all right in favor of it right from the start. But we haven't non-adjacent neighborhood who was quite opposed to it. So we had to, and don't ask me why, but we had to go through a long process of convincing them and the town council that this is a good idea. Town council was right on board with us right from the start as well. So we got through. We have decent relations with the people who were against it. We have great relationships with everybody else. So, and nobody's complaining anymore.
So one of the, so for instance, are you required to keep very careful track of who is buried where? Is that a requirement for a properly functioning cemetery?
It would have to be, because if you start burying people in random spots and have no way to judge, well, you can imagine what difficulties that might come into later. So we're totally surveyed. We have, it's all platted, and we have surveying pins out there. And I said GPS doesn't work because it's not accurate enough. But the way we do it, measuring from surveying pin to surveying pin and measuring square lines off of that, it works very well. Right. And we have an entire platted map. So people have asked me walking through whether we do bury people randomly, and because it looks like it, just because we let people choose. So, so, but it's not at all random. We have to, as a green cemetery, obey every law and statute that every other cemetery obeys. So depth of grave, ours are shallow. Ours are 3 feet deep instead of the normal 5.5 feet deep or so. We do not allow vaults, which most cemeteries require. A vault is a concrete box with a concrete lid, advertised as keeping nature at bay, which doesn't make sense to us whatsoever. But the real reason for it is to keep that ground from settling so that they can mow their lawns and spread their chemicals on the lawns without trouble. So we don't have vaults in our grave. We don't allow caskets that are lacquered. We prefer not to have caskets at all. We allow shrouded bodies, and most people are. And a shroud is just anything, any natural fiber that will recompose.
And if someone was in a casket, if that was something that a family insisted on, it would need to be a casket made of materials that would decompose.
Wood, period. And not exotic hardwoods. We require sustainable woods. So bamboo works. We've had several bamboo baskets, caskets. And wicker and pine is what we mostly get with caskets. And it's raw. It has to be no finishes on it whatsoever.
Wow. So how are the graves dug? And are they dug in similar fashion to a more standard cemetery?
They're dug in a similar fashion to standard cemeteries 150 years ago. We do not have backhoes. We hand dig all our graves. So it's a sizable chore, but based on the fact that we are, as a whole, everything, a very environmentally focused organization. And we want to teach people to be aware of the environment, and we do that by example as much as anything else. So I'm out there. Never thought at the age of 55 my job title would be grave digger, but that's part of it. Wow. So,
what is your relationship with funeral home directors? I mean, are they in a sense on board with this? Does this have any impact on what they do and how they do what they do?
So that's a great question, because it's one we were worried about too. How much pushback would we get from the funeral professionals? And at first there might have been some little hesitation, but I can say honestly, in the Madison area, every single funeral home has been out numerous times to us. It wasn't every single one of them is right on board with what we do. Well, it didn't happen immediately, but it happened pretty quickly. And I asked one of our funeral directors once, you know, how much is this taking out of your pocket, not being able to sell the expensive casket or the embalming? All these things have their individual costs. And he said, you know, he explained it to me this way. He said, we have packages. We have low-end packages. We have high-end packages. And we have intermediate packages. Now, green burials are another package. So it just fits. They just slipped it right into their whole scheme, and it's worked wonderfully. We have a lot of our funeral homes bring their new directors out for a learning session with me. So we'll talk about it and talk about what green burial is and take a tour of the cemetery. And that's really helpful for me as well. So we have no issues with local funeral homes. We have had a few people from Chicago who've been buried, and we talked to some Chicago funeral homes. A lot more pushback there. So in Illinois, the laws are a little bit different. So same with Iowa, the laws are different. So they're not real. There's no state in the country that outlaws green burials, because Jewish burials, Muslim burials, right, and several other religious things, they do natural burials because no embalming is part of their theory, their wishes. So, so everything we do fits in with every law that Wisconsin has.
Interesting.
We are lucky, I want to say this, that Wisconsin laws let us practice green burials in the best form possible.
As opposed to what?
As opposed to some states have depth of burial restrictions. Mm. So ours in Wisconsin, some are like, say, a grave has to be 5.5 feet deep minimum. Ours in Wisconsin says we have to have 18 inches of soil on top of the container.
Oh.
So that means if I have an 18-inch casket tall and I dig a 36-inch hole, then I have 18 inches on top. More or less. Right. And the reason that the graves are shallower is not just to make my job easier, but because it's in that top layer of soil that the most microbial activity is going on to help with the recomposition of this person. And I say every body has a ton of nutrition in it that will recompose and break down into a form that is absolutely usable by the trees and foliage.
And so you're, in a sense, offering up your body in this way.
Everybody is. We just do it efficiently.
It's so. Life everlasting.
Yeah. There's a.
I mean, in real life, it's life everlasting.
And you know, whatever you feel about the afterlife, mm-hmm. that is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Because we... regardless, we move on.
Mm-hmm.
You've sold 500 plots,
mm-hmm.
and are there room for more?
Oh yeah. So our phase one is the map itself shows 7,420 individual lots. We're never going to hit that. We expect to hit maybe 3,000. Because we're not going to cut down trees to access a plot. We have some terrain that's a little steep. We have some geology that's a little difficult to get through. So we expect to get 3,500 sites out of phase one. So
you mentioned the fact of no embalming. Can you explain to our listeners what the issue is with embalming and why a body embalmed would be somehow counter to the values that you are espousing here?
Yeah. So there's a couple issues with embalming. There's I'll explain a little bit about how it happens, and I'm not going to go into much detail. But in the embalming practice, what they are doing is putting in a chemical potion that's made up primarily of formaldehyde, which is the preservative. And it works pretty well. It's very short term regardless, but it does affect the eventual decomposition of the body. But they don't just add the embalming fluid. They have to remove all the fluids in your body to make room for the embalming fluid. So it's basically they open up one end and insert something in the other end and start pushing out everything that's in there. It gets much more extreme in that because they have to go into each individual organ and remove the fluids, and it doesn't work quite as easily as I say, and I'm not going to go into more detail about that. But the bodily fluids that are removed, they go right down into our sewers, and they end up at water treatment facilities, and it puts a burden on that. So we don't like that process because of that. Formaldehyde itself is a highly carcinogenic chemical. And embalmers, those people who do the actual embalming, have high rates of thyroid cancers and other types of cancers, way above the norm. So, and the other thing is, we don't want chemicals in our cemetery. So that is a big chemical. It doesn't do anything good for the environment. It's probably, people say, well, what about polluting groundwater or something with uncasketed bodies? Eventually, all that, it's not an issue at all. Dirt is a great filter, but it's not going to filter out the toxins.
Right. They just don't belong there.
They just don't belong there.
So how expensive is this? Is this, I think somebody hearing this conversation would assume that we're probably talking about something that's maybe significantly more expensive than buying a burial plot in a more standard cemetery.
I'm surprised you said that, because most people come in and say, oh, this must be cheaper. Some people come in and I tell them the price and they think, oh my God, I couldn't do that anywhere at any other funeral home. And I have to explain to them that we're a cemetery. You also need a funeral home. So when people ask me that question, how much is it? And I'll tell you exactly how much it is, but I'll kind of lead up to that. The cost is that we have set does two things. So when my dad began this whole thing, he wanted the revenue, because there's so many excellent nonprofits around Madison. There's like over 3,000 501c3s in the Madison area. He didn't want to compete with that scarce resource of funding for nonprofits. He wanted to be self-sustainable. So it was his vision that the proceeds we get from the cemetery pay for everything else that we do. And we do the farms. I didn't mention the 550 other things we also do. So that was his goal. So the pay to be buried, there's two costs. There's a $2,500, what we call the legacy donation. That is a straight up donation to the Farley Center. Tax deductible, potentially. The laws have changed, but still potentially tax deductible. And then the burial, the basic burial rite for a shrouded body is $1,000. That's opening, closing, finish. So $3,500 is our base price. It always has been. We've added costs on the margins, caskets, because the hole I dig has to be a lot bigger. We've added a couple hundred to that.
Someone insists on being buried in a casket.
Yeah, and we because, do. Yeah, people right. do. Yeah. And we also bury cremains, which cremations are also have an environmental cost. burning fuel at burning a body at 1700 degrees for 4 to 8 hours takes up a lot of fuel and emits a lot of things into the air. So we do allow them to be buried there, but we certainly don't encourage them. I do often tell people that if they have a choice between cremation and a conventional burial, a modern cemetery, go with the cremation. That's a one-time environmental cost, whereas a conventional cemetery is an ongoing environmental cost. So that's how it works. So you've already heard our pricing, how it prices out compared to other funerals. We don't look at ourselves as an economical cemetery. In other words, we're right in the mix as far as where it is. We're not high, we're not low, we're right in the middle. The savings come in what you purchase to be there. You're not purchasing a vault. You're not purchasing embalming. You're not purchasing a $10,000 casket. Right. So what they say is an average funeral in this country costs about $12,000. That's with funeral and burial. With ours, our average cost, and it's not because of us, it's because of, well, it is sort of, but it's because of what people aren't purchasing.
Right.
So the average cost for us is probably around $7,000. For the entire thing. And I might be a little off on that. I don't know exactly what people pay to various funeral homes. I will say this. If you're looking for a funeral home, call around because the prices have a huge range for the same product.
Yeah. Have there been any surprises for you as you have entered into this venture?
That's a hard answer to a question to answer just because I'm learning something new every day, whether I'm surprised at it or not. I guess one of the surprises is the way people look at our cemetery. They think it's a kind of a you can do whatever you want, right? And no, we have our own rules and regulations, just like other cemeteries do. For instance, we only allow plantings that are native plants, native prairie or native woodland.
Nan
but
is smiling.
Often,
oh yeah.
It was the markers that I talked about, the polished ones. So every once in a while, I'll go into the cemetery and I'll see somebody's planted a bunch of daffodils, or bleeding hearts, or something that's not native. And every once in a while, I'll go in and somebody will have brought their marker and plopped it in place. And it might be something I don't allow. It usually is.
Right. And that's interesting. I can see how somebody might jump to the erroneous conclusion that this is just this lovely little meadow and anything goes. And we're far away from the rules and regulations of Washington, D.C. This is also a place where certain things have to happen. And some of those rules are outside rules, and some of those rules are your rules.
That's exactly right.
To safeguard the central mission of this beautiful place. Nan, anything you want to ask Shed Farley about all of this? We have a couple of minutes.
I'm feeling blown away in a very, very good sense because I wasn't certain what the tone and timbre of the conversation would be, because I don't know anything about this at all, about green burial, because it's not terrifically common. The first person I ever knew who had a green burial was the great Lori Otto, who started the native landscaping revolution, back in the 70s. And it was just as you described. Her body was shrouded in beautiful cloth, and she was conveyed on a caisson. And she was put into the earth that she loved so much, and a beautiful native tree was planted at her head. And that was quite some time ago, and I've thought about it often after that, because many of the people I know would enjoy this kind of ending to their corporeal life because it's completely life-giving. You nourish the soil and the plants around you and everything else, but then you also continue nourishing life after that at the farm because now these people come in and grow food and continue their lives. And it's joyous in a way. Mm. I'm just really moved by this, very moved.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful idea. Mm-hmm. And how wonderful that this has all come to pass and something that that both of your parents would certainly be so pleased about and proud and to have been a part of this at the very beginning.
So when my dad died, he didn't know I was going to take over. He was asking me about it, but I was indecisive. So I wish he had known that I had chosen to take over.
It's a beautiful story. So if people want more information, it looks like they can go to farleycenter.org/NPS, which stands for Natural Path Sanctuary, and that's the portion of the Farley Center where these burial grounds are located, correct?
You can also, it has a separate website of naturalpathsanctuary.org.
Naturalpathsanctuary.org.
You can go to both sites from either site.
Very good. Shed Farley, this has been an incredible conversation. Yes. It really has. And sometime I hope we can have you back to find out much more about the Farley Center for Peace, Justice, and Sustainability and all that you do. But in the meantime, this has been tremendously interesting and inspiring. And thank you so much for being part of the morning show today. What a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, I'd be glad to come back in the spring.
Right, on a sunnier, warmer day. Very good. Thank you so much. Nan Calvert, any events you want to tell us about?
I have so many events to tell you about.
Then talk fast.
I will. I'll talk very fast. Okay, Riverbend Nature Center, Sugar and Off Pancake Breakfast begins Sunday, March 1st, continues every Sunday through March, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., $8 for adults, $5 for kids 10 and under, and three-year-olds are free. And under free. Chiwaukee Prairie Preservation Fund, their next volunteer workday will be on February 15th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Go to the website for directions and details where to meet. If you've never done this before, it doesn't make any difference. You don't need any experience. If you've always wanted to get involved in some sort of native lands management activities, this is a place to go. Just show up and they'll show you what to do. Obviously, dress for the weather. The Great Backyard Bird Count starts Friday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. And it goes through Monday, February 17th. The Great Backyard Bird Count is a worldwide joint effort by the Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology, the National Audubon Society, and Bird Studies Canada. It's open to everybody. Go to this website, gbbc.birdcount.org, for all of the details. And finally, the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center will be holding on February 22nd from 9 until noon a workshop to turn dried gourds into birdhouses. And they're always artistic and beautiful. Learn the process from the very beginning to the very end, and you go home with a beautiful home for your feathered friends. It's limited to 10 participants. $25 covers all of the materials, and you can register at the website. Ta-da!
Very good. I am impressed. Nan Calvert, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for arranging this wonderful morning show today. And thanks again to Shed Farley, our special guest, for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you so much. Truly my pleasure.
Terrific time. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. We want to remind you that the morning show is archived on our website, wgtd.org. And you can also subscribe to The Morning Show as a podcast. Look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. It's available on all of the major podcast platforms, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast. And with the podcast, you can hear a different morning show 7 days a week, including treasures from the morning shows of days long past, all the way back into the mid-90s. And many of the podcast morning shows over the weekend are of that vintage. So again, look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, featuring unique shopping and the historic Jack's Cafe featuring an eclectic menu. A Kenosha tradition since 1911, modernized for a new age. Visit jackandrea.com for more information. Jack Andrea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. We're approaching 9 o'clock.